You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, April 19th, 2024. This is Grandpa Dan streaming at RadioAlbion.com. It is Friday. We're wrapping up the official end of the work week, although I know a lot of people get stuck working on the weekends. That's how it is. Hopefully that's not you, but regardless, I thank you for joining us today to wrap up on a Friday. As always, I like to remind everyone that we have our Sven Longshank support links here on the page for the Daily Nationalist. I will continue to encourage you to write him and drop him an email or postcard or whatever. I did recently hear from Sven, and he was letting me know that he's continuing to do well, and he does continue to receive notes and postcards from all these. A lot of times, especially with the snail mail, there's a significant delay in him receiving those. And obviously, he's very restricted on how many he can respond to because it all has to be read by the prison officials. So don't let it discourage you if you don't hear back from him. You know, that doesn't mean he didn't appreciate hearing from you. It just means he can't. It's only allowed, like, I think it's 4 at the most responses a week. And hopefully he's getting a lot more than that. What is Friday? It is the end of the work week, and I am continuing. I'm continuing on my quest to get back to this being a lighthearted, more of a lighthearted discussion to wrap up the week. That's always what Sven intended the Friday show to be. As you all well know, I've had very mixed results with that, but I'm just going to keep plugging at it. I'm not bringing any specific stories. Instead, we're going to just kind of talk about various things from this week that I've seen in news stories, I've read in different topics. And honestly, I find just humorous aspects of all of them. Of course, this is Friday, and the big news this morning was Israel has struck back. The evil empire has struck back at Iran with a missile attack. There's not a whole lot going on, of course, or a whole lot of information, rather, about it. But, of course, you can't believe anything the media says. The same people that immediately after the terrorist attack in Moscow, within an hour, they knew it was ISIS. And the media parrots that. After the Iranian attack on Israel, like within no time at all, why we were informed by great authority that 99% of the Iranian equipment got shot down. And of course, in this one, Iran was given a clear message. Now, I did see a clip where Iranian TV was like out there where supposedly the missile hit, and they were showing like everything is normal. There's nothing going on. I think it's kind of a big nothing burger as things stand right now. I guess we'll see. But it's kind of funny because when you look at these things, like in the context of nations, like, and you put the like national personality and you put it on to like, if this was an individual person and how they behave, it's like a single missile firing back. It's like, what is the point? You know, because like the U.S. was like basically begging their master Israel, you know, just let this go, you know, don't strike back at Iran. And Israel's like, no. You know, we have to be, it's like one of those people that has to have the last word, you know, like it doesn't matter what that last word is. You know, the people I'm talking about, like if you get into an argument or a discussion with them, they can't ever just say, yeah, I was wrong, you know, or say, well, I'm not going to agree with you. We'll leave it at that. No, they have to get the last word in, and it doesn't matter. Like the last word could just be, oh yeah, well, your sister's really ugly and she takes after your mama. Who ugly too. And it's like we were talking about the topic of whether or not, you know, slave reparations. You know, it doesn't matter. They have to get the last word in. What is Israel accomplishing with this final? We're going to be the last ones. And it's up to the Iranians here to be the adult in the room and to say, yeah, whatever. I guess you got the last. Yeah, we won. It's like this national personality. They got to get the last word in. Oh, yeah, we're going to be the last ones. You know, if Iran dropped a firecracker, like the Iranian response to this was, we're going to lob one of them cherry bomb firecrackers over the line into Israel, and it blew up. That'd be it. Israel's got to do something in response. It's funny because, like, individual people that do this, it's always this sense of pride, you know? They've got to get that last word in. It's nothing to do with who's right, who's wrong, who it benefits, if it benefits the person who has that attitude. All that's irrelevant. Winning in that person's mind is getting the last word in. And you see this reflected like in national personalities. You know, Israel has to get the last word in. The U.S. over there begging and groveling, Master Israel, please just let it go. You're putting us in this bad position. No, we're going to have it. We've already made a decision. We're going to strike back. We got to get the last word in, because it's like in their mind, if they're the last one to drop something over on the other guy and they don't respond, that means they won. It has no bearing on the big picture of what you're defining quote unquote winning as. It's so petty. It is so ridiculous. They've got to get the last word. They've got to be the last one. Has nothing to do with, I mean, the Iranian strike, they gave them like all this advanced warning. It was very, you know, to use the term, scripted. They were going to, you know, there was a reason behind the response. But they didn't want it to escalate. You understand why it was all taking place. But now Israel can't let it go with that. They're like that person. They got to get the last word in. It doesn't matter what that word is. It doesn't matter what the topic is. No, they got to get the last word in. If they launch a single missile that lands out in Iranian desert and blows up and Iran doesn't respond, then it means Israel once again has won and sent a clear message. We got the last word in. Talking about the U.S. running around and begging is so funny. It is. It's funny. You got to laugh at it. Look, you got to. I find that's why I get frustrated with myself, because I'm trying to get back to the humorous side, and then I wind up trying to find humorous articles to do for the Friday show. And finally, it dawned on me. It's like, why? Because all of this stuff is stupid and it's funny. The U.S. You're talking about the U.S. begging Israel. The U.S. is supposed to, you know, if you looked at it and you didn't know any background, you would look at this and you have this great big country, the U.S. And they support this, what, you know, from the outside, you would say it's a client state. You know, Israel, you send them all this money and this weapons. And somebody, like, if you were just suddenly appeared on the earth and you looked at this dynamic, you'd say, well, the U.S., you know, is the colonial power and Israel is the client state. So the U.S. is the one calling shots. And yet, no, you have this opposite thing. The U.S. is the client state and little Israel is the one calling the shots. U.S., you know, begging Israel about this. And it's like, why are you begging? You're supposed to be, you're the one sending them money. All you got to say is, well, we're not sending you any more money. Watching the U.S. twist itself a knot. He had this thing this week. They had a vote at the U.N. on recognizing the Palestinians as a state. You know, it's all this U.N. gibberish. Of course, it's all symbolic. It doesn't mean anything. But you had all these countries. You have all these countries that voted on the Security Council. 12 countries voted in favor of. There was one no, and you don't have to guess who it is. Israel's client state, the U.S., is the one guy. I wonder if they have like a contest, you know, during the week, you know, the week prior, you know, if anybody misses a day at work at the State Department, if anybody misses a day at work in the diplomatic corps or comes in late, whoever that person is, they've got to go to the UN and you got to be the guy that gets his picture taken, being the only guy in the room holding your hand up, voting against this that everybody else is voting for. One guy holding his hand up. Then you had two abstains. These are funny. The abstain vote, the UK, and I think it was Switzerland was the other one. You see, the abstain. Abstain is for those that, you know, they don't want to be on the record one way or the other. They want to keep it ambiguous. See, I look at the abstain votes. Those are the countries that are voting that, you know, well, we're also with the U.S., but we also have too many Muslims. So we really don't want to cause problems. You know, you get these countries, it's like, oh, well, we're going to vote to abstain. We have too many Muslims. We don't want to make them too mad. We imported too many of these people, and now they might get mad and burn stuff down. So we're going to abstain. It's so funny to watch the U.S. go around and continue to play this this role, you know, the lone superpower, you, the mighty U.S. hegemony. And then they're becoming more and more, I say, you know, the old meme about when the U.S. talks about the rest of the world and it shows the U.S. and then their little vassal states. And as we've watched, Israel has become a pariah state for the entire rest of the world. And because the U.S. is owned by Israel, the U.S. is becoming a pariah state right along with them. So you get this great big, one thing for little Israel to become a pariah state, those things happen. But you get the U.S. on the one hand is trying to play this role of global hegemon, the lone superpower that calls the shots in the world. And they're becoming more and more this giant pariah state. Pretty soon you're going to wind up with the world will be the U.S. and Israel. At some point in time, they're going to start losing their other little vassal states in Western Europe because they too, like the UK, they've imported all these Muslims. Pretty soon you're going to get more and more abstain votes because they can't afford to roll the dice. It was funny reading the ridiculous pretzel twisting excuses that the U.S. wrote for why they voted against. You know, well, we're not against it. But, you know, it has to come about by the two parties sitting down. And you know, and Israel's already said, well, we're not ever going to let the Palestinians have a say. I mean, they're not even playing that anymore, you know. It's kind of like how the U.S. goes around and does the whole we support the one China, you know, we support the one China position while at the same time treating Taiwan like an independent country. And try to play this kabuki, play this theater. Watching the media report on all this stuff going on, of course, they skipped the U.S. vote at the U.N. And the media was reporting on Israel striking back. And they were talking about, you know, Israel having these problems. Poor Israel. They have all these problems. And one of the things they listed is also facing unrest in the West Bank. Unrest. What unrest? The unrest in the West Bank. The unrest in the West Bank are these Jewish settlers are going in there and shooting Palestinians and burning their homes and taking the land over. That's unrest, you see. It's all how you present it. It's got this unrest. What other sorts of ridiculousness? I saw a more local news story of ridiculousness. just the other day. And they said Russian hackers did a cyber attack on the metropolis of Muleshoe, Texas. Y'all don't know where Muleshoe is. I have been to Muleshoe, Texas. It's out in the panhandle, kind of middle of nowhere. A place called Muleshoe. And according to this story, Russian hackers did a cyber attack on Muleshoe because it's of such strategic importance. And in their vast, evil Russian cyber attack, they caused the water tower to overflow. They caused the water tower in town to overflow for a bit by this evil Russian cyber. There's never any explanation of why the Russians are doing these cyber attacks. I saw a deal with some anon on the internet years ago, and it was very enlightening. Because you hear these terms like cyber attacks, hacking, and the vast majority of people have no idea what the hell any of this means because the media always presents this narrative. You know, they'll show this story, they'll have to run the file footage, and it'll be a guy in a hoodie and all this code on screens in the background and just this wall of numbers. And this person is frantically hacking, tapping on the keyboard, You know, in the show reflecting, he's wearing shades to make him look more sinister, and all the code on the screen is going across the shades, and he's frantically, and it's in the movies too, but the media does it as well. They'll run a story about Russian hacking, Chinese cyber attack, whatever the case. And they always show somebody in a hoodie. It's funny, whenever they run a story about, you know, the North Korea, I saw a story one time and they ran that same file footage. It's like the North Koreans did a cyber attack. The North Koreans, and they run the file footage, you know, of the sinister hoodie guy. And it's a white guy. And it's like, so white people are working with North Korea now. This is nice. It's nice to know. Even when the North Koreans are involved, the bad guy's got to be a white guy with his hoodie, the shades, and all this code going across in the reflection of the shade because he's happy. Frantically tapping on the keyboard, so he's breaking through the firewall. See the other numbers pop up, and he's got to get the numbers in just in time. Anyway, years ago, I read on the internet, some anon on the internet on somewhere, I don't remember where it was, but some guy on the internet said, look, he's, you know, there was some story about some ridiculous hacking. And this guy said, you know, I was in the military, the U.S. military, and he said, you know, my job was, you know, this counter espionage, counter internet, you know, internet security, you know, to keep the hackers out. And this person said he got into this in the military. He got into this and he thought, you know, he had this visions because he'd seen the file footage. Counter, gotta be countering, you know, all of the hackers. And when he got into it, he thought he was going to be, you know, the guy sitting there, there's his job, was going to be countering this. And then he went to school and he got into this in the military, countering the hackers. And he said, my job, people don't have a clue. And he's right. How all this works. He said, my job in the military was cybersecurity, stopping the hackers and keeping them out from getting all the sensitive information. He said, my job consisted of having to hold meetings and seminars and telling government people not to open up janky emails with links in them. Don't click, you know, when you get a weird email and you click on it and it's got a download in there, don't click on the download. Don't click on the image in there. And it's funny, because like anybody with basic common sense knows this, but you see, you got all these government people and they don't. They get a janky email, you know. I don't know. Click to see amazing vagina and bulbous. And they click on it. They double click on it. They get these people are in. He said, that was my job. There's nobody on the other side of the world wearing the hoodie and the shades going tap, 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 tap. Breaking through the firewall. Oh, and I'm on the other side, frantically tapping on my computer because I'm trying to get the numbers up to block him. It's like a game of Tetris. People think this hacking is like a computer code game of Tetris, and you're sitting there, and the hackers are the ones dropping the Tetris blocks, and you're changing the scene, and you're keeping them out because if it goes all the way to the top, the hackers got in. No. It ain't even like they said, I just might have spent all my time. Cybersecurity amounted to telling these morons, don't click on emails from people you don't know. And if you do open an email, don't be clicking on some janky link or some janky file download that's in the email. You remember when the whole thing about Hillary Clinton's emails, you know, the John Podesta thing. And they were like, oh, Russian hackers. Russian hackers got in it. And the truth of the matter was, it came out. The truth of the matter was, I think it was John Podesta or some other pervert in the Hillary Clinton camp got an email. It's like, click on the link, got some spicy pizza. And you remember all of that. And they got all horned up and thought he was going to see some juicy pizza or something. And he clicked on it. Voila, they got into their files. It was very enlightening. As I said, my whole job was telling these morons, don't click weird shit in your email. No matter who it's for, don't. If you get an email from somebody and you think it's someone in the department, you don't bother to check the email address. And it's not so-and-so at .gov like it always is. It's vagina and boobs at .co or whatever the hell. You don't look. And you look and it's like, oh, I think that's John down in Human Resources. You open it up and it says, I need you to click on this file. Don't click on the file. Look, make sure it's from John and call John. Say, hey, did you send me a file? I didn't know I was getting this. John going to be like, no, I don't know what you mean. Come on, John. You sent vagina boobs. I'm clicking on the file. No, don't click on the file. The Tetris will get in. Silly. Russian hackers got into the system and Mulesu, and in their evil Russian plan, they caused the water tower to overflow for a little bit. another win for Russia. That's the other thing. You know, you get these hacking stories like that one. And they never tell you what the point would be. You know, it's always implied that like every Russian hacker, quote unquote hacker, is supposedly working for the Russian government. You know, and what great win was there then? How did Putin win by causing the Mulesu water tower to overflow for a little bit? They never tell us. I saw another article, opinion piece. I read all kinds of stuff. I have just a wide range. I like to read a lot of wide ranging sources and get a lot of different points of view. For one, it keeps me myself from getting stagnant. And also, I like to understand how other people are seeing things. And you learn. For instance, I'm seeing more and more, excuse me, I'm seeing more and more normie people start to talk about this whole weird relationship between the U.S. and Israel. And they're starting to notice, there's more noticing going on, very anti-Semitic noticing. I like to see where the people are coming from and the way the people, you know, view different things. But I read an article this morning, a little fairly low tier opinion piece. But I've read this person before and you know, sometimes they have, you know, somewhat entertaining takes on things. But this piece was, you know, basically along the lines of, what happens? You know, what's Trump got to do if he gets in there? If we get Trump back in there, how is he going to save America? How's Trump going to save America? And everything. Look, this is what we got to do, patriots. When we get Trump back in there, this is how we're going to save America. And it was this whole, and then it just devolved into this ridiculous fantasy land, you know? Gotta abolish all of these government agents. You don't know how many times in my life I've heard this story. Gotta abolish this government agency. Gonna get rid of them. And this fantasy involved really ambitious stuff. Trump's gotta get rid of all of it. CIA, the NSA. Totally gonna happen. It was just this weird, like fantasy world. But Trump's going to get in there and he's going to turn it all around. And it's real funny to me because the Trump thing has really devolved into a personality cult with heavy emphasis on the term cult. Because, you know, it's turned into this like Messiah thing, you know, the second coming of Trump. And he's going to save us all this time. You see, the first time he sacrificed himself and everybody was trusting the plan. There wasn't a whole lot of plan. But see, this time it's Trump 2.0. It's the second coming of our Messiah, St. Donald. And it's so funny because it's just completely devoid. It's completely devoid. You see, it's got all these, it has this entire religious element to it. You see the religious element. He's being persecuted. It's being poor St. Donald is being persecuted. And if he can overcome the persecutions and the second coming of Trump, he's going to save us all. He's going to go in there and he's going to tackle the deep state. And of course, this is all a complete denial of who Donald Trump is. These people have this Messiah image of Trump. And it's completely devoid of who the man is, how he's lived his life. What is this Trump campaign? Yeah, you know, I always remind people, you know, remember the name of his book, The Art of the Deal. He's a deal maker. That's who he is. And yet that's gone out the window and he's now a Messiah. All you're seeing here, you're seeing Trump make these statements. He's attempting to make a deal. It's playing out in the public. I'm sure it's also playing out behind closed doors as well. But what you're seeing is this public broadcasting. This is Trump attempting to make a deal. That's why as the U.S. becomes more and more isolated and is becoming a mega pariah state alongside its master, Israel, you've got Trump coming out there talking, criticizing Joe Biden, saying Joe Biden, you know, is not going hard enough for Israel. After the Iran strike on Israel, Trump came out and said, this would have never happened if I was in there. Because everybody knows America's super strong and super tough. And Iran would be quaking in their boots because we're going to super support Israel. And it's like in one hand and out the other because they want to hear that. Or maybe a lot of these people, they want to super support it. I don't know. But what you're seeing with this, because you know the elections are rigged. All the same people that are worshiping St. Donald the First, they'll tell you. They'll tell you the election was stolen. But then they'll turn around and say he's going to get in there, though, this time. It's going to be different. And they never can answer how he's going to get in. If you ask them, they'll say something along the lines of, well, we're going to get so many people to vote for Trump that they just can't. I've read supposedly well-educated, smart people, and they make this same argument. We're going to get so many people voting for Trump this time that they're just not going to be able to fake it. Remember the last time Biden didn't even leave the basement. Like he literally, I think he had one campaign appearance and that was on Zoom and he screwed that up. I don't remember what his story was. It wasn't the uncle getting eaten by cannibals. That's a more recent one, but it was along that tier. And somehow he magically got, but they say, which is, that's the way. We're going to get so many people that the evil deep state, they can't. No, that's not how he's going to get in there. He's going to make a deal. Remember, his book's called The Art of the Deal. He is making a deal. That's why he's out there publicly, and he knows who he's got. By the way, it's telling because he knows who he's got to make a deal with. That's why he goes out there and he's making all these statements about how he's going to super support Israel. See, Biden's problem is he doesn't support Israel enough. He is going to super support Israel. It went from, you know, this Ukraine thing should never happen to now it's, well, we're going to give Ukraine money too, but we're going to make it a quote unquote loan instead of a gift. See, he's making a deal. This isn't just double talk. He's trying to make a deal. He knows who he's got to make a deal with. You figure out the common denominator. It's not that hard. He's trying to make that deal. And if he gets the deal, I suspect, and we are going to only speculate, what's the hang up? What's the hang up on the deal making? And I suspect, just pure speculation, is we know that to get the ticket, to get the deal done, the other side really requires an ironclad guarantee. You know, it's like going to the bank. And you say, I want to borrow $20,000 for a car. The bank wants collateral, you see. They want collateral. And that collateral generally is, they want something that guarantees you're never going to turn the tables on them. That was the whole Epstein thing. And that was just one of many operations. That's just the one that kind of got publicly exposed. And they were successful in diverting the conversation into, you know, oh, these rich people were banging teenage girls or whatever. I can almost guarantee you there was a lot more nefarious things going on than that, because you got to have blackmail material. That's the guarantee. Part of the way you ink the paper is they get collateral. They got to have an ironclad guarantee that you're not going to turn the tables because they can release this information. And I suspect Trump is kind of hesitant to give them that. And that's the holdup here. As a holdup, he's publicly trying to make the deal, swearing he's going to do more for Israel and pointing out how much he did for Israel. The red cap people that are still out there following Messiah, you know, St. Donald the First. They don't understand why he's talking about all this, but they think it must be good. Messiah Trump can't be wrong. He's making a deal. I suspect the hang up is what they're wanting is a guarantee that he won't turn on them. I would say that was their problem with the guy in the first place. He got in there. Everybody got sloppy and lackadaisical, and this guy managed to get in there. And he never did anything really of substance. But they are so paranoid, they couldn't stand the fact that they didn't have any blackmail material. They didn't have a guarantee. We can't have him in there without a guarantee. He could do another Holocaust or something without a guarantee. You know, he did everything Israel wanted. He did all of this stuff. You know, the Red Hat people didn't get much, if anything. Israel got a lot of what they wanted. It's making a deal. And you'll know he made the deal, okay? This is just public. You're just watching the public face of the deal negotiating. That's all you're watching. You'll know a deal got inked. You'll know a deal got inked when all this crap that's going on, like all these different, the big news, oh, they've seated a jury in the Trump trial in New York City. And all the Red Hat people are upset, you know? This is obviously a kangaroo court, which it is. Well, you see, that's the other side exerting pressure on this whole deal negotiation. You'll know the deal is inked. I'm going to tell you, I mean, we're being lighthearted because it is funny and stupid, but this is all serious. You'll know an eel has been dinked. I ought to make that the title of the show, an eel has been dinked. And people will be like, what the hell is he even talking about? You will know a deal has been inked. If all of a sudden, because I guarantee you, if he can get this deal done, like that, all of a sudden, these judges that are out here, you know, ruling against Trump at every turn, and these ridiculous diversity hire prosecutors that know less about actual, like, what should be the law as far as on the books than I do. All of a sudden, all these anti-Trump judges that are sitting on these court cases, all of a sudden, if you wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden in a surprise move, this judge has thrown the case out. Oh, some new evidence came out. Oh, there was a problem and a technicality in the prosecutor's case, and the judge had no choice but to dismiss all the stuff. And the prosecutors will vow to come back, and we're going to recharge him. We're going to get our P's and Q's, because I guarantee there's a ton of technical mistakes. Look at these prosecutors. If all of a sudden the judge finds a technical mistake in these cases and we're going to throw it out, and the prosecutors will say, well, we're going to come back. We're going to come back and recharge them. Only that ain't going to happen. If all of a sudden the judges turn around and all the cases are being dismissed and there's a problem with the case and this and that, and it got thrown out, and all the Orange Man bad people are doing one of those Wojak meltdowns with the tears and all of that, you'll know. A deal has been done. A deal has been signed. You'll get the second coming of the Messiah Trump, St. Donald the First. And unsurprisingly, the Red Hats, once again, will not get anything they want. But don't worry, that won't stop them from going around telling you how they won. We're going to wrap up on that note. I thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you haven't had a chance yet, go back, check out our great content Monday through Friday. We've had everything up this week here on Radio Albion. You get a chance, you're out mowing the lawn or whatever, you can download a show and listen to it. It's always really good stuff. Encourage you to do so. I hope you enjoy your weekend. Plan to be back on Monday to start your week off next week. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.